Hey everybody, Kevin Frischel with the Theotech Podcast, and today we're going to talk to you about how to become an expert Bible software user. Yep, that's right, an expert. We believe you can do it with enough diligence and training and all of those good kinds of things. But this morning, we want to introduce you to our regular crew. Of course, Wes, coming to us live from New Jersey, pastor and tech person for the American Baptist Churches of New Jersey.
There you go.
Good morning, Wes.
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Good. And then LaRosa, becoming a lot more regular, thankfully, way in the wee hours of the morning out on the West Coast out there. And he's an early riser. We were talking about that just a moment ago. Of course, he's from Olive Tree Bible Software and author of, remind me the name of your excellent book on discipleship. What is it?
Raw Material.
Raw Material, that's right. And I'm about two-thirds of the way through that. It's a very good book. Excellent book to hand to someone who has just become a believer or who really is sort of floundering in their faith and needs to get back on track. And I really recommend it. I say hand it to him. You really probably have to email it to him, maybe buy it for him and send it to him as a link. But do you have physical copies that you sell?
Yeah, you can order one from Amazon.
Oh, okay.
It's print on demand.
Good. So that would be an excellent tool. In fact, I may have to do that and start giving them to new members here at the church. And then also, normally coming just down the road from me in Charlotte, but today is in the land down under, we have Antoine. What are you doing in Australia?
I believe Rick used to say that Antoine's from the future and comes to you guys from the past. So it is now it's now Saturday morning here.
All right.
But I'm at the I'm visiting with Global Recording Networks, missions organization who does pretty much audio everything. They have over 6,000 languages recorded of gospel messages and Bible text. Well, it's not text; it's all audio or video recording. So I have some meetings with them, and then I'm also here for the International Conference of Computing and Mission, which will be going on next week, a few hours north of me.
Awesome. That sounds cool. After you get back, I'd love for you to share more about that. That sounds like a couple of really neat things. Well, listen, this morning we are going to jump right in. If you're a Bible software user, if you're watching this, chances are that you probably are a Bible software user, and you may be at all different kinds of levels, from just beginning to a really advanced person that often gets called on by others. Hey, how do you do this? And you know, wherever you are, you can probably learn more. Or maybe you've got one product that you've been using for a long time and you started to feel like, this just isn't doing it for me. I'd like to find something else that works better. And so you jump ship and go to use a different product. And so how do you become proficient? I consider three levels of using Bible software, guys, and you can tell me if you would add any or what you think of these. I think some people use Bible software for just the basic simple thing of just reading Bibles, reading books, and searching, and that's it. That's all they use it for. And then other people open up the hood, so to speak, of their software, and they get into the real detailed and technical things. They learn how to do it, advanced word studies, advanced searching, how to find things like, verses with the aorist tense version of this word that's also included with the an accusative noun, you know, that kind of stuff that gets real deep technological things that I almost never do. So how do you get from that, you know, real basic level to that real advanced level? That's kind of what we want to talk a little bit about with you. And we're going to kick it off and just, I think probably the first place you want to go is if you have a decent Bible software program, it's probably going to open up, and it's probably going to have some help right there built in. What do you think, guys? Have you seen that often? Isn't that usually the case? There's some kind of help feature built into your software.
Yeah, there are varying degrees of it. I think, you know, the best that I've seen is Accordance. Their help module is insane, and they keep it up to date. Olive Trees is pretty good, too. Sorry, LaRosa. But that's a good place to start.
Okay, LaRosa, what do you think?
Yeah, the help site is, or help articles are definitely the first thing to go to if you're learning how to use Bible software. And I'm thinking of places like Logos, where they're getting much better with it now, where for every little feature they have a video showing you how to do it and how to do different kinds of studies and things like that. So there's lots of stuff. And like even here, like on Hangouts or YouTube, just searching that and seeing what you can find there, because there are lots of people that have walked this path before you and can share the information that they've gleaned. They probably already put it online somewhere.
Yeah, I've opened Olive Tree, and of course yours is just real simple. You open it up and Bible Study App Help and Bible Study App Diagnostics. If you click this, it just takes you to your help webpage, right?
Yes.
And I've got that open already. If I can find it, there it is.
The next tab.
Next tab. There we go. Yeah. So here you can just kind of search. For example, let's say I need help and how do I use the resource guide in Olive Tree? The resource guide. Explain what that is real quick, just as I said that. Some people may not know what that is.
Yeah, the resource guide is basically the hub that really dives into your entire library. Because one thing with the way Olive Tree is set up is, because it's mobile first, we don't search your entire library for one. Like, so if you're searching for love, we don't just search every single book in your library. But the resource guide, we tag certain resources with different headings, scripture sections and things like that, and the resource guide pulls all that together based on the current passage or topic that you have open.
Yeah, so like Sunday I'm preaching on Romans 11:11-16. It's really 11-24 is the pericope, but that's just too long for me to deal with in one passage. So I've decided to break it up into two from here, and so I can go in here and find, you know, what does the NAC New Testament commentary say about it? I can go back down here and get, you know, it talks about Paul. I've got maps. And a lot of the programs do this kind of thing. So maybe you don't know how to use that. And so, you know, you pull up that help page and it shows you this, how to use it. I'm on a Mac, so that's why I clicked how to use it on a Mac. So every one of these has something like this. For example, Bible Works. You know, you said you felt like Accordance does the best job of that, and I think they do. They've got a lot of resources. BibleWorks, I don't have it here on my Mac because I really don't like the Mac version of it. Mm-hmm. But in BibleWorks, there's a screen that pops up at the very beginning, and it asks you, you know, if you need help, and it gives you links to all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I actually think BibleWorks, at least on the Windows side, is also one of the best at training their people.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing is BibleWorks often will offer free seminars and workshops. I think Accordance workshops are free as well. Mm-hmm. Am I right about that?
Yes.
I recently, this subject came to my mind because this week I went to a word search training at Ridgecrest Conference Center, which is just up the road from me in Asheville. And I had to pay for it. It was $30. And then Ridgecrest charges you what I call the walking around fee. they call it the campus usage fee. I sort of wish Word Search had lumped the two into one thing and you just pay one bill up the top. But anyway, so I had to pay for this training. But it was a decent training, and I enjoyed being a part of it. But if you just go to their website right here, they've got a bunch of free training as well. Mm-hmm. But what we did is they had two different courses. They had a beginning level and then what they called advanced. I would have called it probably more like beginner plus or intermediate level training, where we didn't go over the nuts and bolts of how to use Word Search. We went over doing things like creating desktops, which still seems sort of beginning level to me, but he was organizing desktops for specific topics, like doing word searches, word studies, doing expository study, those kinds of things. And then he showed one of their new features, that note stack feature. If you guys remember when we talked to Rick Maloney from Word Search, he showed us that note stack feature, which is kind of like a, you know, your old card research, 3x5 mm-hmm. index card research that you did when you learned how to write a research paper in high school. It's kind of that, and he showed us how to do that, use that for sermon study and sermon preparation, which was kind of neat. So this is another place you can go. You know, just go to the website. That's sort of our first tip. Now, I see that, Rick, you've joined us. You're joining us from an airport somewhere, aren't you? You're muted.
You're muted, Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, I'm at the Lexington, Kentucky Bluegrass Airport.
All right, my old stomping grounds there in Lexington. Yeah, we're just talking about places you can get support, and I know that Accordance has a very rich training and support website. Tell us a little bit about what we're looking at here. I've got, you know, podcasts, live webinars, training seminars, interactive courses, blogs, forums. Yeah. What is all of this?
Well, you know, these are a number of ways that you can get to know the software better. And, you know, I didn't know if I was going to be here this morning, so in anticipation of this, I even wrote a blog post. If you click that blog link up there, it will you should see, and it'll be right past that first post. Yeah, go ahead and hit blog, and then, yeah, there it is right there, 7 ways to become an Accordance expert. So this was my input in case I couldn't be here this morning. But the, you know, we do offer training seminars. In fact, that's why I'm at the airport, because I'm flying out to Texas. I'll be doing a training seminar, kind of like what you attended for Word Search this week, and I'll be at the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary on Saturday, and then I'll be at Dallas Theological Seminary on Monday to do two of these all-day seminars, which we offer for free, and it's an excellent way to get to know Accordance, but it's kind of a fire hose approach. I mean, I recommend that everyone do that, but you know, on that blog post that I put there, you know, I said the number one thing that you can do is to just live in the program, you know, just to use it every day, and that's you know, it's like a person, you know, if you really want to get to know someone, you have to spend time with them. And I think that's the main thing. And then ask questions. You know, if you don't know how something works, just assume that it'll do it, and then try to find out how.
Yeah, I think that's a big point, Kev, is if you sit down at a Bible software and in the middle of a task and you're trying to do something, hate the Bible software, because you'll spend 90% of your time trying to use the Bible software and 10% of time trying to get your task done. And you'll feel that pressure, and you'll transfer that onto the software. You will hate it, like you hate a person who's wasting your time. So you have to, I would say, you know, Rick puts it as live in Accordance. I would say you have to be willing to play with the tool. You know, we spend a lot of time saying how children learn by play. I really am convinced that human beings just learn by play. So it literally is follow rabbit trails and be like, I want to figure out how to do this today. And set aside just a little bit of playtime instead of watching a YouTube video or trolling through Facebook or catching up on a television show, and just spend, you know, that little bit of time just figuring out one particular tool. And then when you can't, you go to the help forums and the help online help and things like that. I just think that's always the best approach.
I think that what you just said about that is sort of echoing what Rick says right here.
Yeah.
About
absolutely.
Make the decision to use one tool, whether it's Accordance, Olive Tree, Logos, Bible Works, Word Search, Liridian's Pocket Bible, whatever it is. Make the commitment to use that tool and stick with it for a while, and you'll find whether it fits or not within probably a few weeks, right?
Yeah, I remember.
After that first initial few weeks, you say, yeah, this fits. They have organized their software the way I like to study, or they've organized the software in a different way than what I'm used to study, but I like this better, that kind of thing. Because, you know, the philosophy of how you study the Bible affects greatly the design of the program. Isn't that right, Antoine? You talk a lot about design and that sort of thing, and you're often very critical, but that has a lot to do with it, doesn't it? The design of the program is going to affect how you study.
Exactly. And, you know, really to echo what you all have said already, but the kind of put an extra asterisk on how Wesp framed it. If the app isn't really designed well enough to let you play and discover how to use it best for yourself, then you do find yourself running into those training videos. The interface, or at least how it flows, how it guides you into best ways of using the technology of using that tool. Really, that's going to be the difference between you being able to be, you know, to really like the tool or it becoming a clutch for you. And, you know, I know years ago, LaRosa and I would talk about Bible software. We'd always say, you know, why do you keep coming back to Logos, or why do you keep coming back to Word Search? Because in those applications, they were designed and it followed a certain process, a way that you wanted to play with the software so that it was easy for you to use the software. There was not a kludge. It was not heavy. It was not heavy-handed. I think in a lot of respects, you know, I mean, part of that's going to be on the user. You know, we all have different mental models for how we study. So therefore, the user interface is going to speak to us differently. But it's also on the side of the Bible software application, and as it's built, if it's not a good flow to it, if menus are all over the place, things aren't cohesive, it's going to be really hard for folks to maximize their time and the value of that software.
And there's silence.
Sorry about that. I accidentally muted myself because I was just having a little bit of a coughing fit a moment ago. I'm looking at the BibleWorks page, you know, right now, and of course, their help links are mostly inside the program, but there's some good stuff here. We also see, you know, Word Search, their training. They have a thing called a basic training, and they schedule live webinars that you can register and be a part of so that you can actually ask interactive questions with them. Something they have called Word Search University that I learned about. There's nothing right now going on, but if you want to, you can email them and get integrated in with this. They also use Wigio. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Wigio, a training, an online training and interactive tool, intermediate, advanced. Anyway, some of these you'll have to contact them and say, I want to get involved in this. I want access to this, because they won't jump right off on the page to start. But this is one of the great tools. Of course, we talked about Accordance going through here. You know, you've got Rick's article here is an excellent one, by the way. The free all. I've been to an Accordance training a long time ago under Accordance. I think I don't remember what the first one I got was. Accordance was it would have been 8 maybe or 9. Anyway, and they do really good trainings. I just like you said, I didn't live in it, and so I didn't remember it. So I need to go to another one of those. Then here's another thing. You say use forums, and most of these websites have a forum of some kind, right? And those are excellent places because you might have a specific thing that you can't do or want to do, and the training is a little too general, and you haven't found it in the training yet. Or you don't know where the training is. There might be a video or an article about how to do that feature. But you don't know where it is. You go to the forums, and there's going to be someone in those forums, if they're active forums, that help you. I think one of the most active sets of forums is the Logos forums. If you go in, where is it? There we go. The Logos forums are incredibly active and very detailed. You see all the different kinds of forums that they have in here. You know, Logos forums, if you ask a question in there, you're going to get an answer probably within 5 minutes. Now, sometimes that answer might be, you know, on occasion, not very often, but on occasion, the folks in the Logos forums can get a little critical. Is that a nice way of saying it, maybe? So you have to be kind of thick-skinned in there. But going back to...
That's actually an important point there you bring up. You know, not so much the forums, but the tone and the tenor that happens in those forums. For, you know, those folks who may be new to using Bible software or refreshing themselves, to I would probably caution them before going to a forum. The attitude of a forum is not the same as a training video, you know.
Right.
For better or for worse, the heavier-handed fans are going to be in the forum. You know, not just the, I mean, you obviously you're going to get a lot of help from folks, but there's definitely a different tone to forum questions than there is to maybe a training session, webinar.
Are Bible software forums really that negative? Video. Antoine, are Bible software forums really that negative?
Not negative. I don't want to say or negative
harsh.
Is not the right
word. Harsh?
The tone is different.
Let me explain what I meant when I said what I said. First of all, if you go into the Logos forums and just, you know, you just ask a question, you're going to get very kind and helpful people
right.
9 out of 10 times. They're just going to really be they're going to welcome you. They're going to say, here's your answer. Or they're going to say, hey, you know, here's a place you can find it. They might also kind of give you a gentle prodding saying, you know, use the search feature. It's really useful, and that'll help you find your answers before you try to ask the question. And so, but 9 out of 10 times they're going to be really helpful. Now, here's where you're going to come into problems in a lot of software forums, and that is when you get frustrated and begin to get critical of the software itself. Certain forums, they're going to absolutely attack you because they're huge fans, and they've made an emotional investment in their software, and so they're going to start to, you know, be very critical of you. So that's when they get critical. So I was being a little unfair of the Logos forums. The reason I say that is I've had a negative experience because I am critical. Not, I don't think in an unfair way, but when I see a weakness in software, I point it out. Mm-hmm. And I say, here's an area where this needs to be improved. Oh, but it's better than it is in this other, you know, and they'll start defending it, comparing it to other software, and you know, it's like, I don't care about that stuff, so don't bother me with that.
See, that's interesting. My experience with Bible software forums is the Bible Works mailing list, which I used to think was fantastic back when they used to do mailing lists for things, and the Accordance forums, which, I mean, it's having worked with user forums and user boards on Linux, and then coming over to like the Accordance forum, like I probably don't even notice that because the Linux people are just dang right nasty. You know, it's just you ask a question and they just go RTFM. Thank you so much.
That means read the fine manual, doesn't it?
Yes, it's exactly what F stands for. but like I've seen in Accordance, to me, I've actually been rather remarkable. It's been rather remarkable in the Accordance forum. And again, I don't go there all the time, so it could just be rose-colored glasses. But I'll have people who are reporting bugs and it's affecting their system. And they're alarmed, but they're not ticked off. And I think that might be because Helen just is always in there and she's calming people down.
you don't know who Helen is, a lady who works with Accordance, right, Rick? And she's a very sweet, kind lady and does a great job of helping customers out in there.
Yeah, you know, I've found that the Accordance forums have a, you know, they have a good spirit of collegiality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes things can get out of hand. They can get out of hand anywhere, and usually when that happens, it kind of gets shut down pretty quick. But you know, if someone's being nasty, but that's very rare. I can't even think of a time it's happened in a while. But you know, I think it's a great place. And what I said in the article was, if you have a question in the middle of the night, you know, someone's up somewhere, you know, around the world, and can help you. And I see people help each other all the time. You don't know how to do something, put your question in there. People will help you. They don't shoot you down or tell you to read the manual or anything like that. So I've been very, very pleased with the way that our users have responded to things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, that's what goes on in the other software forums that I've used. Most of the time, it's very positive.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That's exactly what I meant by the tone. You guys described it exactly what I meant. You know, the pace of the conversation in a forum is going to be different than if you self-select the training resource yourself.
Yeah. Now, LaRosa, you guys don't really have a forum per se, do you?
No, we've actually gotten rid of ours because we had so few users that were actually using it, and it just got so full of spam it wasn't worth keeping around.
Okay. One of the other things, you know, video, in my opinion, is the best way to get software training, and I think, you know, Accordance, you guys do a great job of this. You've got the Lighting the Lamp podcast linked in your article, Rick, which I'm pulling up now. You know, BibleWorks has really great videos. WordSearch has some really nice videos that you can watch. You know, and if you just start watching some of these videos, if you have the capability of doing a dual screen setup, I'm going to sort of make y'all dizzy, okay? So be careful while I do that. I'm going to quit screen sharing here, and if I can get my camera going. But, you know, if you could do one of these, you know, I really recommend that you do something like that. I'm putting you on there, Wes, so that I don't make anybody else dizzy anymore. But those kinds of doing that dual screen thing is really great, because you can have the program on one screen, and then you can have the video showing on the other screen. And one of the things I learned during this training session that I went to at Word Search is, and this is really, really hard to do, watch the video first, then go into your software and try it. And if you have trouble, go back and watch the video while you're in the software. You understand what I'm saying? That's really hard to do, but it actually is so much more efficient. Because what I found myself doing is the guy who was doing the training standing in front of us, he'd be doing the training, and he's got a big screen showing his copy of the software. And I'd quickly look down at my computer, and I'd get focused on what I'm doing here, and then I'd miss something of what he's saying up there. And you can't rewind a guy, you know, so you have to raise your hand and say, what's that again? And so I did it, but then when other people would do it, I'd be like, just quit, just listen. So he kept saying this. He said, up here, everybody up here, everybody look up here, look up here. He said that over and over and over again, and I wanted to slap him, but it's because he understood this concept. So watch the video, then try it on your software. And if you still have trouble, watch it again while you're trying on your software. So you're watching the video twice.
Yeah, every time I tell people not to take notes while I'm talking, because they completely lose the whole flow of what's going on. And everybody who takes notes will never ever understand anything I teach. And so I say, watch, then we will do, and after we do, then write down your notes. And people refuse to get there. I don't learn that way. And you go, well, yeah, but you're not learning this way either. So, you know, why don't you try it my way for a time?
Antoine, you had a suggestion, you said.
Yeah. Two monitor solutions are always a neat, you know, advantage if you have it. But I think of, you know, a lot of folks that are either getting started or, you know, beginner, intermediate in Bible software. They may not have two screens, but they definitely have a tablet or a mobile to go along with their screen. And instead of, you know, using the laptop, you know, your primary screen or your primary computer as the video driver, you use the tablet as the thing to which the video is on, so that you have kind of some of that benefit. Nice job, Wes. You have kind of some of that benefit of the two-screen effect. But I think it makes a little bit more, it feels more like notes when you're using your tablet, because the orientation of a tablet screen when you're trying to see what the feature is doing as you're watching the video or you're doing a skill alongside lends itself to a learning posture more so than a dual monitor posture would. And I mean, you know, we all write our notes head down, you know, back curved, you know, kind of thing. And that same kind of posture tends to lend itself a little bit more to learning, at least a learning posture when it comes to software. And for my teaching, that's usually what I end up recommending. You know, be on your tablet or whatever notes you want, but also keep your eye on me.
Another thing to do is, a lot of us are YouTube users, and find your favorite software, and very likely they'll have a channel on YouTube dedicated to their software, and just go ahead and subscribe to it. Like, you'll see over here down over on this side down here, you know, I've got all my subscriptions. Well, there I've got Logos Bible Software.
Yeah, I know who recorded those videos.
What's that?
I know who made those videos.
For Logos Bible Software?
No, for the Word Search 10 Basic Training.
Oh, these right here?
Is that you, LaRosa?
Yeah, that's all LaRosa right there, man.
Yeah, LaRosa, you used to work with Word Search and did a lot of these videos early on. Now, they don't seem to have what are we up to now in Word Search?
Word Search 11.
So they don't seem to have a lot of Word Search 11 videos on YouTube, do they?
He's not going to comment on
that. Well, there we go. Collections, Parallel Bible, Icon. Yeah, they do. They do. They just didn't have it on that playlist that I was looking at, because I was looking at the 10 videos. You know, that's a mistake in their website, by the way.
He's not commenting.
Bruce is going to be kind.
I clicked on the Word Search 11 videos, and look where it took me, Word Search 10 Basic Training. So I'll contact them and tell them that they got to get their link correct. So, yeah, that's a great tip in using the videos. And you say that here on yours, watch Accordance, read the Accordance blog and watch our videos, which is great. And then this part we talked about, going to the forums, and don't be afraid to ask. Where else can you ask for Bible software help besides your Bible software's forum or help page, guys?
Social media. Twitter and Facebook.
Twitter, Facebook, anybody else?
Watch Pinterest. Theotech.
Yeah, come on Theotech and make comments in our video pages.
You'd be surprised at the number of random emails I get for people asking about Bible software.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, if you read the Ministry Tech magazine column, there's an outstanding writer that writes for that organization, and he writes in a column called Higher Power, and he's really, really nice and really helpful. And if you'll just read that column, and he always has his email address accessible there, and you can email him.
He's also incredibly humble.
In fact, he's written a book about how I'm the most humble guy in the world. Obviously, I'm talking about myself. I really enjoy helping people. You know, that's a spiritual gift. I like to help people. I like to teach. And I'm more than willing to help. Now, I'm busy, so, you know, don't assume that I'm going to get back to you. I'm not your first line if you are desperate and need to figure this out tonight. It's 10 o'clock and you need to figure it out by 11 o'clock. But if it's Monday and you need to figure it out by next Monday, feel free to email me, and I guarantee I'll get back to you within those days and help you out. Are you raising your hand?
I am, because I actually have another one. So I mentioned I'm out here with a missions organization. I tend to talk to those folks fairly often, and we talk about, you know, Bible software, you know, the word searches, the logoses of the world that folks are really familiar with. But Bible software for a lot of non-English speaking peoples don't exist, does not exist. It's a very hard proposition. So what a lot of those folks use to learn about Bible software, or really how to use Bible software, is they use Google search. And it's honestly a really impressive and interesting phenomena. I have a friend who does a site called Bible Transmission. They help people download Bibles, basically, and put them on memory cards. But in order to show them where the videos are on YouTube or Facebook or WeChat, they actually use search ads inside of a Google search, because a Google search is what those folks use to ask that question. And so they basically use Google ads as a driver to point people to the content that's needed to help them learn how to get a Bible onto their device, or use rudimentary Bible software, which I think is also really good. It's a heck of an innovative method, and it's working really well in Southeast Asia and Eastern Africa.
Thanks. That's excellent.
Hey guys, let me just say real quick, I got to go.
Bye, Ray.
Enjoyed it, and I look forward to watching the rest of the conversation later.
Great, Rick. Thank you, and good luck in your training.
Take care, Rick.
Thanks.
Another source, you know, we've talked about getting Bible help through the Bible software itself. It's going to have it in the help menu. We've talked about going to your favorite software's website and looking for their training and that sort of thing.
Still writing that? What? BS Review is still out there? What?
Yes, it's still out there.
Wow.
And we've also talked about, you know, finding their videos on YouTube or on their website or on their blog. But there's a lot of other ways to get it, and one of those is there are blogs of people, dedicated people who just like to write about it. You know, I'm one of those. I don't want to toot my horn too much for you, but you know, you can go here, and anytime I write about digital Bible study, that's sort of the phrase I coined for Bible software, Bible study. You'll find information about that just by clicking on that part of my blog. And remind me of his name, Antoine.
Ruben Gomez.
Ruben Gomez, thank you.
Yeah, I thought Ruben stopped, honestly. He got tired.
He did for a while. He cut out for a while, and then he came back. And now, awesome. You know, it's been a while. This is, I don't see a date on this, August 10th. So he doesn't write articles like every week. See, yeah, October 1st, 2013, August 10th, 2015. So, you know, it is, he's sparse, but he's got a lot of backlog of stuff that you can read. Yeah, and he does some of the more obscure programs, like Sword Searcher. I don't write about Sword Searcher, so, because I don't use it, don't really want to. I just don't use the ones that focus mostly on open source, not open source, but public domain works. But that's just one I was able to remember right off the top of my head was the BS Review. But there's lots of these kinds out there, aren't there? Any of you guys have any recommended sites that are not affiliated with a particular program that you can think of?
No, not really.
I know of a few, but I don't remember them right off line.
I'm no longer going to toot Mobile Ministry Magazine. Ha, ha, ha. Because we used to do that back in the past. Don't cover Bible software anymore. But there's a few sites. There's not many sites that cover Bible software anymore.
Church Tech. You write for them.
I do, but they don't cover the specific software as much as they may cover methods to use. You know, actually, this subject that we're talking today really would be something more along the lines that show up on Church Tech. They wouldn't, you know, that's not necessarily their focus to talk about, to review a specific piece of Bible software. There is actually a consulting company in the Washington, D.C. area, based in the Washington, D.C. area called Capterra, Capterra. And every once in a while, they do church software stuff in terms of reviews, analysis of the field. About every 3 to 6 months, I see something from them, whether it's a link-based article, link-based-type article or something a little more thorough. They will cover Bible software and usually do so, you know, magazine-type format, a little more high-level, but geared towards the CTO, you know, the home purchaser type buyer.
Let me just mention a couple of other things. I know of one of such of these kinds of things. Morris Proctor is kind of the official Logos trainer, and he does his Camp Logos. And that's
the expensive Logos trainer.
Pardon me?
The expensive Logos trainer.
Expensive, yeah. He really does a lot of it. He's got a website, MP Seminars. They have a little bit of free training. I call this link the MP Seminars advertising page. Because really what it is, it's some free training, but it's mostly just to show you how good his training is and to get you to sign up for a seminar. Because that's really where that's where he pays his bills and feeds his kids if he has them or whatever. But these Camp Logos trainings are actually really good. I've been to one, and I'd like to go to the Logos training Camp 2 sometime. I don't think there's one close by. Let's see here. Anyway, you can go to their page to find where they're doing their training, and you'll see they're kind of all over the country. Greensboro. Hey, maybe I'll hit that one next year. But anyway, that's a good option. And then how many of you, are you guys familiar with Udemy.com?
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay, no. Udemy is a general learning site, and anyone can post on Udemy.
Oh, cool.
So if you want to do it, so notice that the links along the side here. Are you good at office productivity with Google, Apple, Microsoft? Are you a marketer, lifestyle, photography, teacher training? A lot of these courses will be free. Most of them are paid courses. For example, you know, here's one on how to do YouTube for $300. That guy better be awfully good for that price.
So it's kind of like Lynda.com.
Like Lynda.com, but it's not a subscription-based. It's a purchase each thing. So Logos has there's a Master Logos Bible Software course, and I honestly haven't looked at the other ones. Danny Zacharias is the creator of this one, and I got in on a deal. So I bought this whole course. It's 66 lectures, 7 hours of training. I think I paid $15 for it or $20 for it or something like that because I got a deal from Udemy. And I could have bought any Udemy course, but I chose this one. So let's just look, Bible software, see if there's some others out there. I said Bible software, and yet almost none of these are about Bible software. Enjoy the Bible, sentence block diagram. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's enjoyable.
Have you done sentence block diagramming in your study? Have you?
Yeah, it's not enjoyable. It's like, enjoy the Bible. Go back to...
It's incredible
English grammar.
Incredibly useful. I'll just say that. I think it's one of the great steps in inductive Bible study. You ought to do that before you ever open a commentary, in my opinion. Just block diagram it in English. Anyway, so it's hard to. I don't see a whole lot of Bible software courses in here, but there is that one if you're a Logos user, and it's incredibly. And there's Bible studies, the book of Philemon. So, you know, you can go more specific into one of those.
So one of the things that is coming, I'm not going to say the organization that's doing it. I can't quite say that yet because they kind of don't know that I know that they're doing it, but I know. That's my job. But there's a pretty significant Christian organization who – because pastor training is a very big topic area, not just in the mission field, but evangelical field, and specifically to, you know, the folks in the 2040 window, between the tropics. But notice that that's non-English, and so what they're using is a variant of a popular piece of mobile Bible software. Yeah, that's a good way to say it. And it's not the one you're thinking of. They're using that and actually building modules inside of that Bible software as a training component. Which is really neat. They're drawing attention to it using Facebook because that's pretty much the way you talk to people in non-English speaking ministries. That's the way you go. And then after they download that software, they'll actually have you know, this is how you do pastoral counseling and marriage counseling, but they're doing it inside of the context of an app. And the app is connected to Bible software. So, you know, that way you have the text, you have a consistent Bible software package, but it's all happening on a mobile device and usually not in English, which is really cool.
That is really cool.
Well, listen, I just want to make one more recommendation real quick. And, again, this is Logos specific, and that's just because I've said it before that I use Logos and Word Search when I'm actually doing personal Bible study most of the time. But and it's learnlogos.com. This is a great training tool, and it's not cheap. You have to pay for it. They do have some free, but you can get it downloaded on a flash drive, or you can download it specifically. But there's an extensive amount of videos here, and you know, I got this again. I bought it very inexpensively on a what do you call it? It was a sort of like a I just can't think of it. You know, when you pay early and then they develop it and create the thing.
Kickstarter.
Yeah, Kickstarter. It was like a Kickstarter project, but he did it on his own webpage instead of using Kickstarter. So I got it really inexpensively, but it's good training. So, and I'm sure there's other stuff like there out there for the big popular programs. If there isn't, you know, maybe someone, that'd be a good opportunity for someone to make a little money on the side if they're a good developer.
Mm-hmm.
A good trainer, you know, they're good at teaching Bible software. And I think another thing is just don't forget you got friends. If you've got people that you know that are Bible software users, I bet somebody that lives near you is better at it than you are. Mm-hmm. And chances are you're probably better at it than someone else. And so maybe you guys get together and help each other out. And one of the things I've always dreamed of and wished that I could find is a group of pastors who live locally that I could get together with, 2, 3, 4, and that we could start preparing sermons together. And it'd be really cool if you all use the same Bible software.
Mm-hmm.
And you could keep each other in software and help each other with the Bible prep. Because you see things probably in a passage that I won't, and I see things that you won't, that kind of thing. And if you can find 2 or 3 people that sort of have the same philosophy of how to study a passage than you do, that would be helpful. I haven't found it yet. But for some reason, the pastors in my areas where I have lived have all been, you know, renegade Lone Ranger types.
Kevin, I used to just announce that we would do coffee hours, and pastors would come, and we'd work kind of like in parallel and swap stories. So for probably a year and a half or so, I'd end up writing my sermons at a coffee shop about 25 minutes from here. And, you know, 6 or 7 pastors would come. And we weren't doing, like, deliberate planning like you were. But, I mean, you can set it up however you want. But if you put that out on Facebook, might be pastors you don't know who show up.
Yeah, that's true.
I was going to say, yeah, you know, something like that, coffee hours that Wes was doing, or really the term that's used in entrepreneurial spaces called co-working spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And a co-working space for pastors as an advertisement would be a heck of a sell, you know, to a lot of pastors. You know, come, here's a space that's hollowed out for you to work alongside other pastors as you do sermon prep, you know, and, you know, a couple desks set up, some Wi-Fi set up. That'd be easy peasy, and that's something where it would pay for itself relatively quickly.
My fear about something like that, all of the ways that we're talking about doing this, is that we pastors are often not that disciplined with our time. And so for me to say, yeah, I'm going to be studying the Bible to prepare for my Bible study at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday, you know, for a lot of pastors, that's really hard to do because they don't know what they're going to be doing on next Tuesday at 9:30. For all they know, they're going to be, you know, doing laundry or making a hospital visit, and so, you know, and they're just not willing to commit because they're not that focused and disciplined with their time. But, you know, I'm often that way. I wish I wasn't. I plan to get more disciplined going forward because I'm going to make some changes in my life to do so. But anyway, any other comments about this topic before we...
Yeah, I got one, but go ahead, LaRosa.
Yeah, I was thinking... Like, we keep talking about learning how to actually use the software, but I think my biggest tip is learning the tools in the software. So learn the Bible. Learn what's in your commentary. Learn what's in your Bible dictionary. And so that way you're not just searching and need this massive library to do your study, but if you have a few really good tools and you know how to use them and what's in them, that really goes a long way in being able to go about your studies. And it's one thing that we kind of go back and forth with at work because I'm working in marketing now. And one thing I try to tell them a lot of times is, yes, we're constantly trying to upsell customers and users of our software, but at the same time, there are a good majority of our users where all they really need is a good study Bible, maybe a one-volume commentary, and a dictionary, mm-hmm. and they're good to go. So learn the tools before actually learning the software, because those tools you can take anywhere.
Now, just to clarify what you're saying, when you say learn the tools, you're saying learn how to use a lexicon, not just learn how to use the lexicon I have in Olive Tree Bible Software, but learn how to use a lexicon itself so that you know how to do it whether you got a book in your hand or you're sitting at a keyboard, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and then not only that, but learning a specific one so that you know what's in it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Get familiar with your tools. Every carpenter knows his hammer, and even though he has the same hammer that the other four carpenters on the job have, he knows which one is his because he knows that one. And so we need to do the same with our Bible. That's a great tip. Wes, you had something, or?
Yeah, and I, you know, go in with the Rosa, just, you know, to say that it's the idea that these are tools, and that you need to understand that you're using a tool, and you know, there's certain things that are going to go cross platform. And as long as you know how to use the tool, you'll be fine no matter what system you're on. You might have to learn different style languages, but you'll figure it out eventually. My tip was this: we're talking about how to become an expert software user, and we really need to go back to basics. Tip number one really should be: you cannot be scared of a computer. I'm dead serious, because if you're terrified of a computer and I'm gonna use Bible software, the answer is go back to your print books, because you're just gonna end up frustrated. You're gonna hate it. You're gonna complain about it. And really reinforce your own negative impression of these tools. So your first step, number one, is you cannot be terrified and think that if you try to learn how to do something on the computer, you're going to break it.
Yes, and know how to use a computer if you're going to use Bible software.
Right.
So the number of trainings I've been to where I've spent more time trying to show the person how to just use Windows.
Yes.
Instead of actually using the software.
If you have to ask, how do I right-click, you probably should not be using Bible software.
Fortunately for us, our audience, I think, is way beyond that. The vast majority of people who would ever watch this or listen to the audio version of this, you know, they found out how to get to this podcast, and so chances are very good that a lot of them...
I would hope, but if anybody ever shares the video, just make sure they understand. That's step number one. Don't be terrified of the thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of ours are at that level where they're fine with that. Let me just give one more tip for myself as far as just Bible study in general. I've got Olive Tree open here, and LaRosa, I hope I don't offend you a little, but I want to say something about the interface of Olive Tree. You know, you've got this great resource guide, but I think most of us should start using our software like this.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. That's how I start.
What I'm saying about this, here's my passage for this week, right? Read it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the way you have things set up, you're going to add a note. I use notes extensively, okay? And so, you know, chances are what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this on one side, all right? I'm going to put my note on the other side, all right? And I'm going to go here, and I was specifically purposely using word search exclusively this week because I went to this training for word search, and I wanted to make myself use what I had been taught. And so I don't have any notes in Olive Tree for this passage. But, you know, you've got your little note icon here. It shows you that you've made a note. Go through here. I ask then, have they stumbled in order to fall? Well, I need to start writing. You know, what's he talking about? Well, I've been going through the book of Romans. And so I know right off the bat, what the context of 1 through 11 was, or 1 through 10 was. And so I'm going to make a note about the context. I'm going to make a note about as many details as I can. I'm going to start writing my questions down here. You know, what does he mean by stumble? Okay. All of these things, because, you know, stumbling uses that word over and over again. So I know that I'm going to need to do a word study on the word stumble. Okay, so before I ever do my word studies, I'm going to try to figure out, what do I know about stumbling? In other words, inductive Bible study, you start with the Bible and the Bible only. Don't rush to open up these other cool tools that you have. Don't rush to use this resource guide or whatever your software's version of that is, the passage guide, the exegetical guide in Logos, or, you know, in Accordance, they have something like this, don't they, Wes, that sort of goes in and finds all the goodies for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so everybody's got one now. Don't use that right away. Just use the Bible. After you've done, I preach from the Holman Christian Standard Bible. So then, you know, open up your New American Standard, read it there. Then read the New King James and the ESV and the King James. I don't care what church you're in, you're going to have people using the King James. So read it, know what it says. You know, these are just my favorites, but, you know, whatever you're, read it in 5 or 6 different translations. Read it in a literal translation. Read it in a more of a dynamic translation, like the Holman or the NIV. Read it in more of a paraphrastic kind of translation. You know, New Living Translation is a little bit less tied to the actual text, or the Living Bible, or the Message. You know, read it in the Message. Anyway, you get what I'm saying. Everybody start with the Bible and use the Bible. And what you're going to find is then, you know, that, let's see, I'm going to go back to where I was in, where is it? I've got my favorites open, show fewer here. Let me go back to my home and Christian Standard. Then this idea of stumbling, okay, now search this book. Okay, now this isn't the way I would do it. I would actually do it using the Strong's number so I can get at the original. But make your own cross-references. Find your own stuff. A good cross-reference might leave out some verses that you're not going to get unless you do the search yourself. And so do your own English-based word studies first. You know, and it's amazing what you're going to find is if you do this kind of thing where you make all your own observations, write your own questions, and go find the answers in places like Bible dictionaries, lexicons, and things like that. What you're going to find is before you ever even open a commentary, you're going to have a really good understanding of this passage. Then you open up the commentary, and you read it, and you go, hey, wait a minute. I know a lot of this already. Am I right about that? You know, LaRosa, you're really good at teaching people how to study the Bible just from your book that you wrote. Am I right about that? What do you think?
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, that's the first thing I say is if you're going to try to study, just start with the English text before you do anything else. And I remember when I was preaching regularly when I lived in Texas, there were many times where I barely cracked open a commentary before I got up to preach a passage because I spent so much time going through just reading the Bible and using the tools. And that's another thing, too, is reading the Bible and then using the tools to answer your questions, not to have them just give you the answer already before you even have any questions around it, but go into it having questions, trying to, and using those tools to find the answer.
Yeah.
Because that's really what they're there for.
That's a great point because, you know, if you come up with good questions, it's forced you to think about this passage, and it's going to be a lot easier for you to understand it. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been studying the Bible and preaching on a regular basis for 20 plus years now, more than almost 25 years. And guess what? Almost every week I get stumped. I'm like, I don't know. And so that's why you got this incredible wealth of information and people who are far more advanced in Greek and Hebrew and theology and history of the church and backgrounds, you know, of things that what was life like when Jesus said this or when Moses was doing, you know, all those Bible background tools and things like that. All of that stuff is incredibly useful, but it's useful to answer your question you already came up with. And then commentaries and those kinds of things do a couple of things. Number one, they help you test and check your ideas of what you've come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, they fill in the blanks of something you didn't think about. And I think those are the best uses of commentaries. If you read your passage and then jump into a commentary, you're lazy. That's just the flat-out truth of it. You're lazy. And you need to recommit yourself to doing real Bible study because that's not real Bible study. And I know I'm being very critical, but I think this is incredibly important. I think some of the very surface-level preaching that we get in the church today is because of lazy Bible study by the preacher. Am I right, Antoine? You're not the preacher, so you judge whether I'm right or wrong about that.
I preach, and I will agree. I'll agree 100% with you.
Okay. Well, I know you preach. I know, but you're not doing it every week like You hear a lot more preaching than I do because I'm doing most of the preaching that I hear.
Yeah, I do enough. I bless you guys that do this every week. You know, you have a lens into how milky or how meaty things are, that somebody like myself who doesn't preach as often, you know, I hear it from as a congregant parishioner, just as much as I hear it as a teacher, is that you don't want to be delivered soggy food.
Yeah,
that's the way. That's really the best way to put it. You know, right. And the word served well. If your response is to teach the word, it should be, you know, cook the word well, marinate yourself in the scriptures, and you know, if you're a cook, you always are told, you know, you only use a little bit of salt. You don't base your cooking around salt. You don't base your cooking around everything in the spice rack. You make sure that the natural flavors are able to come out, and it's the same way with the word. You have to be saturated with the word of God, as a teacher of the word, so that when you do add the commentaries and you do add the expositional stuff, that it's additional flavor, but it's not needed. It's really not as needed as the pure meat, the pure flavor of the word.
Yeah. Wes, put an exclamation point on this discussion for us.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. I cannot stand listening to sermons, and it's hard. I can't go to pastors' conferences, and it's because I'm just a very strange person. I mean, I'm totally, if you look at Myers-Briggs, and I know it's mostly discredited, but it matches my personality perfectly, I'm totally INTJ. So to me, to start with the question of the therapeutic questions that people often ask of Scripture nowadays, which is more about being a good American than it is being a good Christian, or starting with the emotional grab of grabbing on to the real immediate you know, fears and gripes and struggles that people have without addressing the context of which Scripture is going into, and a lack of understanding of not only the letters of the Bible, you know, especially like the New Testament epistles and things like that, but understanding the context of it. They don't understand the world that it came from. So many pastors don't even bother. I mean, the number of pastors who say that they graduate seminary and never again crack open a book to learn something, I don't have time to study the Bible. I download my outlines and I just work what they do. I have so many people who tell me that they do that.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, cripes, yeah. And it's just, to me, it's agonizing. There is so much depth in the Scripture, and there's an entire world that exists inside of its pages that gets beyond even the word studies and the, you know, the breaking down of grammar. And I don't do a whole lot of word studies. I like reading the Greek, and I pick up like little phrases, and I try to figure out what the heck is going on. That's my version of it. But there's so much depth in there in the world that's breathing in these things. And then you have, to me, to appreciate the way that the church has read these books for nearly 2,000 years, and our Jewish cousins have done it for thousands of years before that. There is so much to draw on that I have no time for shallowness. I really don't. And that's why when you were talking about, I guess we were on Slack this week, and you were talking about, you know, topical preaching, and I went, you know what, to throw a scripture at it until it goes away. You know, that's my definition of topical preaching, is I'll just throw a scripture at it until the problem goes away, which is nice. But then you realize that all these things are being misused and misapplied, and it drives me up a wall. But I'm the word person. So if you're looking at the Myers-Briggs thing, is like I'm the personality type that in literature is always the villain. So I'm a little hypercritical that way. So, but that's the struggle.
Wes, the preacher villain. We need some great superhero villain name for you. Anyway, this has been a good discussion, and I really appreciate you guys chiming in on it. It's good to see all of you. Thanks. We want to thank Rick for being with us, and we look forward. Hopefully next week we'll be back with another scintillating Theotech podcast. We are not sure yet what we'll discuss, but...
Well, hold on. Before you say that, that guest I talked about in Slack, he actually is up for coming, and next week actually could possibly work for him.
All right, tell us more about that, so people will know what we're
doing. Yeah, actually, let me cheat. Hold a second. I switched my...
Well, you find it. Let me just throw my spiel out there. Listen to us on podcasts. If you got your podcast software, you can find it through Stitcher Radio. You can also find it through iTunes. Of course, always go to theotech.com, where you can read a little bit about it and also watch the YouTube videos. That way you can find our YouTube video. When you do find our YouTube video, please subscribe. That way you can get the podcast whenever they come out live. If you subscribe to me, Kevin Purcell, on Google Plus, you will find out when we're doing this live, and you can come join us live every Friday morning. For many of you, that's not the best time to do it, so get it later. I've been very behind, very lax about getting things posted, but that's because last week I was at the beach on Ocracoke Island. I went fishing, and I caught a fish this big, and it was a lot of fun. So
he actually did, too. That's crazy.
I literally did. Yeah, 48-inch
red did. Drum. Yeah, picture proof.
My arm still hurts. It's been exactly a week, and my arm still hurts from reeling that thing in for 10 minutes. Go ahead, Antoine.
All right, so we've been talking about Bible software this week, and Bible software helps. And a gentleman, I met him at a Bible Tech. I could not tell you which one it was. I've only been to a few, and it was many years ago. But he actually went in and created a Bible app that starts from the notes first. So you start writing your notes, and then in the back behind the scenes is the Bible. So that you can link the different note passages to. And what you're seeing on my screen right now is an Apple iPad Mini 3 with slide over, and my notes that I started on this side over here, but then his app, which we will see in more detail here, where I started writing my notes up towards the top of the screen, and then I can actually pull in the Bible verses along the way. And what he did, we talked about earlier how, you know, you can go out and do the help for your item, but he actually built it. He built this app called Verse 3 for our iOS devices, where you actually just pull it in. So you just start writing, and then when you're ready to pull a verse in, you hit the plus symbol or you do a tap and hold, and literally by play, he's allowed you to figure out how to use this app. And it doesn't have a lot of features to it. It's not by any means a word search or My Study Bible. Even in terms of simplicity, it's even simpler than that. But it does allow the person who is listening to a series of preachers preaching. I recall a Kevin Purcell who uses a whole lot of verses, for example, when he preaches. And so it makes it easier for you if you're listening to keep up, but also if you're studying to go ahead and grab as many verses as possible very quickly, and even as far as going into the verse and getting a little more context about things. So he's going to talk about that.
What is that app called?
Verse 3.
Is the 3 spelled out or a numeral?
That's the number. Verse 3 is the number 3. So V-E-R-S-E 3, no spaces. And so
$5 on the App Store.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I tested it many times ago. Gave him some good feedback. A lot of it's gone into the app. And right now, I think I said 10 shows ago that Antoine's not a fan of Bible software. I am a fan of this. Okay. Which is exactly, I know LaRosa is going to probably like wet his pants by hearing that, but I'm very much a fan of this app and how it works for the person who's listening to God speak through the text. It's fairly good. It's very well done.
If you're taking notes during the lecture or sermon, that's pretty cool.
And hopefully, hopefully Ramosa will be able to keep his bladder under control while we talk to him. So, guys, thanks. We're going to go ahead and sign off. We appreciate you if you're still here with us. We especially appreciate you sticking with us all the way to the end. Until next week.
Bye. Man, it's 1 a.m., man. I stayed with all of y'all.
See you later, Anton.